Welcome to the Fearless Women Podcast. We're inspiring conversations for the unafraid. I'm Janice McDonald, founder of the Beacon Agency, author, and global champion for women. Why am I making this show? Because I want to share the inspiring stories of women leaders in business, arts and culture, politics, and more with all of you. Hear how they've chosen to go forward and be bold and make the world a better place, even when it wasn't easy to do. Subscribe now wherever you find podcasts. Hey, everybody, I'm Janice McDonald. Welcome to the Fearless Women Podcast. I'm very excited to have Teresa Marquez join me on the show today. She is an important voice in Canada as the president and CEO of the Rideau Hall Foundation. It's an independent charity established by the Right Honourable David Johnston to support and amplify the values of the Office of the Governor General. Welcome, Teresa.
Thank you, Janice. I'm delighted to be here.
So excited. And thank you also to our listeners from around the world, including USA, Spain, Australia, Hong Kong, Ireland, UK, and so many more countries. We want our community to grow. So please tell your friends and follow us on Instagram. Also, thank you to our amazing sponsors, 30% Club Canada, ADGA, and BDC. So, Teresa, tell us all about the Rideau Hall Foundation. You're the CEO and president. What are you up to over there?
Thank you. Well, I think we've talked about this a little bit before, but I do feel like I kind of have the best job in the country. So the Rideau Hall Foundation was created by David Johnston during his time as Governor General, Canada's 28th, back in 2012. And really, it was around how can we help to create a smarter, more caring Canada? Our focus is on the breadth of the country, coast to coast to coast. And we're working to make Canada better through a range of four kind of areas of focus: the culture of innovation in the country, giving and volunteerism, leadership development, and lastly, learning equity. So how can we help to ensure that all Canadians have the same access to educational opportunities?
And so David Johnston has written so many amazing books. His innovation book, I've given that out lots and lots of times as a gift. Quite an inspiring person to work with, I'm sure.
It is every day I'm learning something new. And actually on the innovation book, it's kind of funny. I have three small kids and they are in school now, obviously, and they get their Scholastic book form home. And I was thinking, we have so many books that we really want to get into the schools. So I cold called Scholastic and said, you know what? We've got this great resource. And they said, thank you. This is amazing. So just today, innovation books, Innovation Nation and Ingenious have landed in thousands of schools across the country, free of charge to Canadian schools. So we're really excited about just getting these books and learning resources into the hands of more teachers.
That's fabulous.
It is.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just cold call.
Call.
That's being fearless.
Well, that's my actual kind of favorite thing to do. Like when you think of something and you think of different partners who might be able to come together and might have a shared sort of interest, and magic can happen. So
I love that because maybe that's a lost art, picking up the phone and calling somebody. You know, I know when my phone rings, I think, who's calling? It's so exciting because another email. Well, aren't we just buried?
It's true. And if you don't recognize the number, even worse so, right? So but sometimes it's worth picking up the phone and answering the phone.
I am inspired by that. Yeah. So, all right. You have been very focused, long and lengthy career focused on philanthropy. I was mentioning to you before we started here that I have a girlfriend who grew up in Norway and has since moved to Canada. And she was talking about, you know, culturally, there's differences, obviously. And one of which she noted is fundraising. We're in Canada, we're always fundraising. We're looking for ways to raise money for all kinds of our passions. And she was saying it's just something that doesn't happen in Norway. Why do you think it's important? Why, you know, and how can people help the Rideau Hall Foundation?
Yeah. I mean, so the culture of giving in the country is something that I care a lot about, and I'm lucky enough to be at a place that cares a lot about it as well. I think, you know, Canada's history of giving is a bit complex. I think there's a bit of a sense probably that many of the social services that we have, for instance, are covered by the government or are supported, but it's not entirely so. So anything from healthcare to social services to community to art to culture to environment, what makes up the fabric of how we live in Canada is really dependent on multiple sources. And philanthropy can play such a strong role in that. Plus, it's also fun to give. I mean, there's something about engaging in your community beyond kind of writing a check that I think brings people together and feels good and that should be encouraged. So we're trying to tell the stories of giving, not only looking at kind of how giving is changing in Canada. We know that it is. We know that the number of givers in the country, and I'm talking about donations, is going down. But also
it is going down. Oh, that's interesting.
Just according to tax filer data.
Okay.
However, the value of their giving is going up. So those who are giving more, but there's a fewer, that group is shrinking. And so we worry a little bit about, you know, whether the next generation is picking up that mantle and how to help encourage them to do so. I actually think that giving is just happening in kind of different ways that maybe isn't necessarily recorded by a tax receipt. So there's lots changing in the world of charitable giving. So it's exciting to be kind of at the forefront of it.
Well, and I think also if I look at my own career, being a volunteer has been a consistent activity all the way through. It's so enriching. Mm-hmm. You learn so much from the experience. Mm-hmm. For me, for example, being an entrepreneur, obviously in any of my companies, I've had the final say, we're going to do this. You know, of course, you listen to other points of view, but mm-hmm. in the end, you're the end of the line. But what's been fascinating for me is when you're sitting around the boardroom table as a volunteer on a nonprofit board, you have this opportunity and I guess challenge, if you will, to convince others of your point of view. Mm-hmm. And that's a wonderful skill to learn. Mm-hmm. And I think also for me, it's been these amazing networks of people that I wouldn't necessarily have come across. So I'm always advising when people ask me for advice in mm-hmm. their career, it's like, get out there and get volunteering.
And start doing it early. Right?
And early. I mean, absolutely.
I remember, it's funny that you say that. I grew up in Ottawa and started volunteering early and ended up being on a board of an organization called Child and Youth Friendly Ottawa. That's the name.
Which still exists.
Yeah. So I was a teenager at the time and realized, you know, I was sitting at the board table and just what that involves and just being kind of wide-eyed to that entire process, but how fundamental it was, I see now, mm-hmm. to how my career kind of evolved. I think it was then that I started to understand, oh, there's a whole world here that I could actually make a career, quite a valuable and meaningful career out of.
Yeah, and I love the idea of expanding your network and meeting people mm-hmm. In different ways. And when they see you around the boardroom table and you know them in a different way, it's wonderful, I think, from a career point of view.
Mm-hmm. Getting to work with boards specifically, I mean, beyond the causes that I've had the good fortune to work with over the years, but working with our boards and with our volunteers who are so committed has really been one of the most valuable just pieces of the whole journey.
Yeah, so people are giving their time too, mm-hmm. right?
People are definitely
we're not always
their time.
Calculating those hours, perhaps, but I think there's a lot of giving.
Well, there is a lot of giving, and I think it was Stats Canada. I think it was maybe 2017 estimated that there are about 2 billion hours given a year by volunteers across the country
in Canada. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
so,
very
anyway,
uplifting.
It's hard to make sense of what 2 billion hours looks like, but it's a lot.
It's a lot of people giving a lot of their time,
exactly.
Aside from their money, mm-hmm. right? Wow, that's mm-hmm. very inspiring. So, what's the last thing that you've done that's really scared you? Sounds like you know you've been out there being bold, as you said, on a board as mm-hmm. a teenager. But lately, what's the last thing you've done that's really kind of scared you?
Gosh. Couple of things, I guess. I mean, I think putting my hat into the ring to become the president and CEO of the Rideau Hall Foundation was a bit scary and daunting. And I did it because it felt like it was the right thing to do because I believed in the organization, mm-hmm. because I believed in David Johnston's vision for the country. Mm-hmm. And I cared about this place. And then before you know it, after kind of working through the steps, here I am. So yeah, that was a scary thing to do.
But I
went for it and it worked out and it's still working out.
Yeah. Yeah. And so how, when you're looking at mm-hmm. an exciting opportunity like that, mm-hmm. How do you banish fear or quieten it? Or
I think if you're not a little bit scared, you're doing something wrong. Yeah. Personally, I mean, I tend to gravitate towards those things that give you that kind of feeling in your stomach. But more often than not, they're the right thing to do. I think for me personally, at least, if I'm not a little bit scared, then you know you need to be a little bit uncomfortable or else you're not growing, you're not pushing yourself.
Yeah. And so do you say a special mantra or mm-hmm. is there a song or
you know not really. I just kind of lean into kind of my quiet if that makes sense. So I know I'm not the loudest person in the room. I never kind of have been. And sometimes that's been equated with being not ambitious perhaps. Or not being confident. And really it's not that at all. I take a lot of comfort in reflection and in that quiet. And I know I've learned how to, I think, embrace it in a way that it's become a strength for me in my leadership style.
when you speak, it's because you have something important to say.
There you go.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah. What about, do you turn to, do you have like a tribe of pals? Is there like a, you know, the, where are you turning to when you need that lift?
I have, again, I feel really fortunate that I've had the chance to learn from so many women in particular. And that's been my, that's kind of been my go-to. Every, you know, from working at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health in Toronto, which was just a powerhouse stack of really accomplished professional, diverse thinking women across a wide range of fields.
And in such an important
In such an important area.
Yeah.
So I've always tried to, again, work at a place where I feel like I can learn from the people who are around me, whether they're on the staff, on the board, connected to our programs, and keep learning. And then, of course, you have your sort of inner circle of those you can trust and who know you over time.
Yeah, both the soft landing, but sometimes the kick too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
A little bit of both, right? Because sometimes we need both. So you travel with work across Canada pretty regularly. What are you seeing? What's exciting to you as you visit our communities?
Just the, you know, we're focused on the positive in Canada. Mm-hmm. And so it's the chance to kind of connect with people, meet Canadians in every province and territory who are doing great things to make the country better. And so our responsibility as the Rideau Hall Foundation is how can we help to celebrate them, to help their work go even further. So it's been just an incredible opportunity to get to know the country a bit better and to feel it and to live it and experience the breadth of it. A few months back, I had the chance to go up to the Yukon, which was fantastic. And I brought my daughter, my 10-year-old, which was incredible.
What?
And,
amazing.
You know, she'd been saying for a while, "Mommy, you travel with work all the time. I want to go to Toronto. I want to go to Montreal." And I said, "We're going to Whitehorse," because I had the chance to go there as part of a program called the Arctic Inspiration Prize. And it was my first time in Whitehorse and the area. And it was so incredible to see it and to experience it, and particularly in the context of the Arctic Inspiration Prize.
Tell us about that.
I'll tell you about that. But with my daughter as well, it's just kind of mind-blowing, I think, for both of us.
I was going to say, especially because neither of you had been there. So you both have fresh eyes.
Exactly.
What a beautiful opportunity. You were there, the Arctic Inspiration Prize.
The Arctic Inspiration Prize is a program that the Rideau Hall Foundation kind of serves as the operating platform for. So immigrants to Canada, Arnold Witzig and Seema Sharifi, moved to Canada, fell in love with the Canadian North, donated their entire life's worth, so about $60 million, into this fund to support Northern-based innovation and excellence. So we often refer to it as kind of the Nobel Prize of the North. It's going into its eighth year, coming up in February. And essentially about $3 million annually through the program is awarded to teams based in the North for projects that are led by Northerners to benefit the North across a wide range of initiatives and disciplines, whether it's mental health, climate change, housing, food stability. It's issues that are identified, again, by Northerners. We're not prescriptive at all in terms of what themes should be addressed. And as a result, every year you get this incredible kind of litmus test of, you know, these are the issues identified by Northerners, bringing forward Northern solutions, sometimes with Southern partners, sometimes not. Always collaborations are key to groups going forward. And we're able to award about $3 million in prizes. So there's a top $1 million prize and then a series of $500,000 and then $100,000 prizes. So for the first time, the ceremony was in the North last year. And it's going to alternate North and South each year. So that was an incredible opportunity to bring my daughter.
Oh, my goodness. And tell us about the prize winner.
Well, there were many of them. I mean, there was one group focused on, again, food stability and a greenhouse that could grow food about 10 months of the year in a climate in the North. So
that's
things
incredible.
Really bringing together Northern excellence and traditional knowledge with modern science. A program focused on a learning kind of preschool, again, bringing traditional knowledge with knowledge from the South. Many, many different types of projects came forward. It was
very
truly
inspiring.
It was very inspiring.
So yeah. 8 years.
8 years.
And if people
like
want to learn more,
they should come to visit the Rideau Hall Foundation's website, www.rhf-frh.ca, or Google Arctic Inspiration Prize. The next ceremony is coming up on February the 5th here in Ottawa. And it will be incredible. I feel like it's the biggest kept secret in Canada. I feel like more Canadians really need to understand the North. I know that there are challenges with that. It's a big country. It's practically, it can be very challenging to get up there. But this is a great way to learn about some of these experiences and excellence that's coming out of the North.
It's inspiring.
A story of positivity, for sure.
Wow, that's very inspiring. So you took your daughter, the 10-year-old, on this amazing journey. Take us back to your 10-year-old self. Mm-hmm. What was that girl like? Where were you living? Were you in Ottawa at the time?
I was in Ottawa, yeah. Okay. I grew up in Ottawa, but my parents were teachers and academics, so we had summers off. And my mom was from Cape Breton, so we spent most of our summers in Cape Breton. And I as a 10-year-old, I was an explorer myself. And I remember having the freedom and without any question, just to get on my brother's BMX bike and go and explore for days. I'd come home for dinner. But just that sense of kind of adventure and freedom and curiosity that you have when you're 10. Yeah. And in a place like that as well was very special. I don't know that I could have done it in big city Ottawa at the time, mm-hmm. or with the same degree of freedom. But I had it there, and I memories I hold pretty dear. Yeah.
Yeah. And so were there the same kids you played with every summer? And
yep, same kids. So some a group of kids who live there and a group of kids who were like me and all different sort of ages and who had family and connections there. Yeah. And
that's so nice.
These lifelong connections that you end up
having. You still connected to?
I am. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
And do you ever make it back there?
We do. Yeah. So we bring the kids, and it's a beautiful tradition. It's a beautiful part of the country.
It is a beautiful mm-hmm. part of the country. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. That is so fun. What about reading? Avid reader? Were you, when you weren't on the BMX,
on the BMX. Yeah. I've always been reading. I used to make my own crossword puzzles.
Really?
But I probably spent more time figuring out the box configuration. Yes. And then by the time I figured out the whole thing, it was not, I don't think I ever successfully completed writing the behind the scenes one, but I guess I could have had a career. I don't know what that would lead to, coding or something.
I would think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, things like that.
Always reading.
Art, drama, always reading though, mm-hmm. always reading. And the reading has continued.
Favorite book right now?
So I'm kind of, my husband jokes, I'm surrounded by a pile of books all the time that
Me
are all
too.
Sort of half read, and I'll have the book for my purse, the book for the plane, the book for the doctor's office, yes. different sorts of things that are kind of always on the go. But I'm reading two things now. One is called History of Canada in 10 Maps.
Oh.
I don't know if you've heard of it. It's by Adam Schultz.
I've heard of it,
it's
but I have
very
not.
Cool.
Is it? I'd
it's
like
really
to read
cool.
that.
It's, okay. it's a bit it's a bit jarring, but it's beautiful as well. So it's how early explorers kind of came to Canada and connected with and understood the vastness of the country.
So big.
Yeah, it was big, and how they engaged with Indigenous people, sometimes in ways that were really inspiring and beautiful, and sometimes in ways that were really, really awful. So it's a stark book, but I've always been kind of interested in how people experience a place, and just mm-hmm. looking at it through the lens of geography was kind of interesting to me as well.
Well, you've given me some homework, so I like that.
The other book I'm reading, actually, which I'll mention,
please.
is Annette Verschuren's Bet on Me.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you've read that, but
that's on
it
my
is
list.
So and good.
Everybody I talk to is saying what a delightful read it is.
It is, and it's become, you know, that book that you read it and then you buy 15 copies and you give it to people. That's what I'm doing.
That
with
was
Annette's
my
book.
David Johnston.
That was good. That's a good answer,
but it's a true answer actually. So okay, that's
so
two.
Yep. I was reading Annette's book, and I don't find it's very often that you read something and it can help you in kind of real time, like immediately. It can help you kind of problem solve something, and it had that
were
effect
there
on me.
Pretty some
profound.
Inspiring words you can share.
Well, I think probably just two takeaways. You know, there are more than two, but
two you're going to profile.
Two that I'll profile. So. Just this notion that you spend so much time thinking about whether it's the right decision or the wrong decision in any mm-hmm. case. Don't worry about that. So, I mean, once you make a decision, you can control, or to the best of your ability, what happens after that. And, like, mm-hmm. you control the outcome, the mm-hmm. after the afterward, basically, to help ensure that decision kind of was the right one. And also that a decision isn't really as important as the actions that come after it.
Interesting.
I don't know. I found that.
That's interesting.
I did not do it justice in
no,
how
no,
I just described it.
No, I get the sense of what you mean.
It was like a bit of an aha moment for me. And it's in her own total voice. And she's a Cape Breton girl, too. And
oh,
you know, I can relate to
that's
that.
Right. She is. Yeah. Well, I will say this. There's a book that I've read before, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyways, Susan Jeffers. And she talks about so often when we think of making a decision, we put it in an either or and we're in search of the best possible decision. And if we were to recast it and think about any decision we make is going to have different outcomes, but that those will be like interesting journey, if you will, kind of. And again, I'm not giving it justice either. But this idea that when we take away that intense pressure to find the right decision, that can also reduce the fear and make you realize, okay, if I do this, I'm going to have these kind of potentially interesting outcomes. And if I do this, some other. So.
And that goes for leadership overall, right? I mean, there isn't kind of one path to one job or one ultimate kind of end goal, I hope.
Yeah. And so if we talk about you in this role as president and CEO, how has your leadership style evolved?
I mean, I think it's evolved quite a bit. I know now to kind of trust my own instincts. And I don't know if
why, because like what happened?
You know, I to some extent it's about experience, but I don't entirely think that's true. I mean, I think about Greta Thunberg and just that's not about experience or age, right? But that's leadership and that's following your instincts. So in my case, I think it did have to do with, you know, just being more comfortable in my own skin, being more comfortable in going back to my earlier point about not being the loudest in the room, about leaning into my own strengths and you know, using them to kind of build up the rest of our team. You know, I think there's something also to kind of becoming a mother, which has definitely influenced my leadership style over time in a way. In a way, I think that has made me, you know, I try not to use my mom voice at work, but I have it.
And comes out every so often.
It comes out every so often. And I think it's also my work and my own path to leadership has made me a better parent as well at the same time, which is always kind of fun to see.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what's something you wish you knew earlier?
I suppose it would be around the importance of kind of resilience, I would say. So I had a very, you know, happy childhood. And again, growing up, spending a lot of summers in Cape Breton. Parents are both academics, but I had to become a caretaker to my father when I was quite young. So he was a professor, a university professor in classics, but was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease when I was 14. So between the ages of 14 to 22, I cared for him at home with my mom. And as you know, you can, I won't get into the gory details of kind of what that was all about, but it was very, very trying and very difficult. There's moments in that period where you think, you know, how am I going to survive this? How is it going to, you know, what will happen next? And I know now that that was integral to who I am today in a way that I'm grateful for. I know that those values that, I don't know if you always have them or if they just become honed in a situation like that, but around commitment to family, around responsibility, around compassion. And I think also around being kind of a calm in a storm. These are all things that I live and breathe every day. And I think that they are stronger because I went through something that was pretty tough at kind of a pivotal age.
So tough. And especially when you think it's not what other people are also experiencing.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's hard for other people to relate even to the challenge.
Especially at that age, too, you know. So I guess it's just around being this realization that you're a product of your kind of life experiences.
And for you and your mom, though, must have had such a dramatic impact on your relationship.
It has. I moved away from Ottawa. I moved to Toronto kind of after that period for graduate school and thought my life was going down a certain path until I veered back into the charitable sector and spent about 16 years in Toronto. So it's been wonderful to move back to Ottawa with my mom. She lives with us now, which is, again, probably
so
too much
lovely.
Information, but it's all,
no,
I feel like I've kind of come
full
circle.
It's so beautiful, especially, you know, when you have young children and you have such a great relationship. So you're lucky.
Yeah, I do pinch myself sometimes when I have a 7-year-old son who wants to, oh, he's 8 now. Sorry. He's just turned Mother of the year. He's 8. And the time that he wants to spend with her, because she's in her 80s, talking about the war and the boys coming home from the war. And I hear these stories that I just think there is no way that they would. It's so rich and valuable for him, and it's so good for her. And I feel like I'm just blessed to be kind of witness to this good thing that is kind of happening.
So beautiful.
Yeah.
And it just happens because they're around together. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't have to fit in on a Sunday afternoon at a certain time.
No, exactly.
That's really beautiful.
It just is. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's just so moving to hear that journey, and it's so inspiring. And I think it's the kind of thing that we need to share about, mm-hmm. our journeys, because this is a really unique part, and it's really shaped you, as mm-hmm. you said, who you are.
Mm-hmm. I probably couldn't have articulated that even 10 years ago. You know, I think you kind of get to a point where you maybe see how pieces fit together. But I've been thinking much more about my own, the kind of person I am and the kind of leader I want to be. And I see how this, how it all roads kind of lead to this position.
Yeah. And it also, your caring and passion for philanthropy and for mm-hmm. a great Canada mm-hmm. makes so much sense, from your own personal mm-hmm. story. It's really powerful. Mm-hmm. So final question, Teresa.
Mm-hmm.
What is your dream for Canada?
I feel like I have too many dreams for Canada.
I'm
going to give you like a bucket list.
I want to hear
probably.
Them all.
Okay. My Canada bucket list, I guess. I would say, first of all, again, going back to this idea of kind of equality of opportunity, that, it's a Canada that, where you end up is not based on where you started. So, the life that you are born into is not necessarily predetermining the life that you're going to have. So for all Canadians to have a level of equality, or the same level of equality to opportunity, would be a pretty mega goal for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think moving forward on reconciliation, I think there's been so much progress, and I feel very fortunate again to be where I am at the Rideau Hall Foundation, to engage with and work with and learn from really incredible young Indigenous leaders in the country. I see so much potential, and I'm excited for where the country is going, but I still think we have some work to do.
Is there something, I was just going to jump in there. Is there something in particular that you've learned from those young Indigenous leaders that you'd like to share?
Well, many things, I would say. I guess just the what's come home to me is just really the importance of prioritizing Indigenous culture first in education, in employment, in healthy and thriving communities. Just the centrality of culture and the need to really value culture and what we all can learn from Indigenous peoples and their culture. This has been a learning journey for me, and it's, again, once you have that, once you begin to kind of unpeel the onion, so to speak, and learn more, you have to do something with it. You can't not have knowledge about our past and not do something with it. Does that make sense?
And we weren't getting that knowledge. I'm thinking about my education mm-hmm. in elementary school. That wasn't part of it.
It wasn't. Yeah. So I think that's starting to change, but very different ways across the country. So we have some ways to go. I would say, for Canada to be very serious about climate change and tackling it. I think I'm inspired that it seems to be now an issue that is fully on the table that everyone's talking about, but we need to do something with it. And then I guess, lastly, a Canada where there is no child living in poverty and where no child dies by suicide. And that probably goes back to my experience with CAMH and the Center for Addiction and Mental Health and the 6 years I spent at that great institution. And that's where we need to be.
You've seen the challenges mm-hmm. and it is, I've like you been involved in youth mental health, and we've got a lot of work to do.
Mm-hmm. We do, but amazing breakthroughs are being made, in brain science, and in clinical treatment and in stigma reduction. Right. I mean, it's not one of those aspects that they all need to kind of come together. So, again, I think we're on the right track as a society. But going to see your psychiatrist should be no different than going to see your dentist or mm-hmm. going to get your leg treat it because you broke it. That's the wrong way of saying it, but you know.
Yeah, if you need help.
If you need help.
Yeah.
It's health.
You want to be able to go and get the help you need for your best life.
Exactly. Mental health is health.
Yes, absolutely. That's an absolutely beautiful dream, dreamza for Canada. Teresa, it's been such an absolute delight to have you on the show today. You are an important voice in Canada, CEO and president of the Rideau Hall Foundation. Teresa Marquez, thank you so much for being on the Fearless Women podcast.
Thank you, Janice. It's lovely to spend time with you, as always.
Thanks for listening. We want our community to grow. Tell your friends, follow us on Instagram, and sign up for our newsletter at fearlesswomenpodcast.com to get the early scoop. Subscribe in Apple Podcasts or in your favorite app. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star rating. I'm Janice McDonald. Stay fearless. Thank you to the 30% Club Canada for your support of the Fearless Women podcast. The 30% Club believes that gender balance on boards and in senior management not only encourages better leadership and governance, but diversity further contributes to better all-around board performance and ultimately increased corporate performance for both companies and their shareholders. Want to learn more? Visit their website, 30percentclub.org, and select the Canada chapter to find out about membership, supporters, and key resources. Thank you to BDC, the bank devoted exclusively to entrepreneurs, for your support of the Fearless Women podcast. We love smart companies that want to amplify women's voices. For more information, go to bdc.ca/women.